From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Thoreau, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Lydia Simchich, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Mark LaCroix, I too make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are discussing scope and inspiration through research. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. And also for this week's episode, we're doing a little follow-up from the recent Nice Thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to dive right into it.
Yes.
For folks who didn't listen to that episode, shame on you for one. But we talked about a bachelorette party game.
Yeah.
To be reductivist about it, that you put together. It was part of a big epic quest.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve and I helped you brainstorm your little corner of it.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell listeners how it went?
So I think it went pretty well. I have some words from the brides themselves.
Oh,
so
we have a feedback.
That's good.
First off,
wasn't in the feedback form.
No, sorry.
I guess we.
Well, I guess you weren't wrong. So.
Oh, true. Hey, I wasn't wrong.
Oh, that's good sign.
I first want to give a big thank you to the matron of honor on Kaisa's side, Maddie, for one, getting the miscellaneous materials like the comically large chain and the combination lock, but also for making the poster board ahead of time. She did an amazing job based off my mural board, and it helped a ton. And she also had disclaimed that her Minnesota and Iowa outlines would be too much to draw. And then she made the cutest little outlines ever. And I was like, I can't print something off to cover these. They're too adorable. So, and they were effective. They did look like Minnesota and Iowa. But some words from Kaisa, quote, I was losing my mind the entire time and having a fantastic time doing so. The top section did get to me as a chronic overthinker. I got the cats and lovers section pretty quickly, as well as Einstein and Ian's name, but spent way too long overthinking what numbers everything was supposed to be. We ended up reverse engineering the wedding party number once we found out it had to add with 2 to be a square root number. The cipher was great. We accidentally red herringed ourselves, but I love ciphers, and trying to solve them is a lot of fun. Every time we started to figure out what the code phrase was, I got so excited. I think the analogy was the other big one that stumped me. Trying to figure out why 32 was significant to Minnesota had me at one time calculating how many months Esme and I have been in the state so far. Again, chronic overthinker. Also, I'm surprised we got as far as we did before Esme just decided to brute force the correct combo number on the lock. I kind of was expecting it to start once we had the middle number. Maddie said she looked up at one point and was apparently, and I was apparently excitedly slamming my hand against the floor multiple times. She said that was when she knew it was going well.
That's
Kaisa also said at one point that one of her favorite book series very frequently used Caesar ciphers. And so that was a very nice call back to her youth.
I realize we missed a bit of a trick there, because once you find 2 of the numbers, then it's actually very easy to brute force the third.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What we should have done is because we had a little extra step of the final modifiers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That should have been once you figure out the numbers, then another postcard thing is given to you with the key for all the things.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, next time someone gets married.
Next time. Someone in my D&D party gets married.
Right.
This is from Esme, who wrote these as bullet points. Bullet point, and I'm just going to go point by point. Endless swearing at myself that I haven't done ciphers by hand in years. I took a grad-level cryptography class. Gosh, I hope I don't need to use it here. Checks out that my issue with doing the cryptography is basic reading of my own handwriting. This is why I type my notes in program.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, please don't make me do frequency analysis on this. One apostrophe really does make a world of difference. What on earth number is associated with Ian, ellipsis, and Terabang? At one point, because also one of the quests was a Thieves Guild quest, so we would roll to try and steal things from them. We rolled deception versus perception, and so then we would take them and then give it to the Thieves Guild, and then they had to do a thing at the end to get all their stuff back. And at one point, Ian went in to steal something, and I had them roll a perception check on Ian. I said, there is only one Ian in the room. And that's what got them to figure out what the number
nice.
Ian should be.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow, there is a lot of thought put into this. I wish I could have helped make this. And then this is quoting me. What do you mean you don't know what insert puzzle term here is? In Terabang, 2 more question marks. And that was for the rebus.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they didn't know what that was.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I made two mistakes that made it, did make it a little.
I don't believe it.
I know. This is
well, what, it couldn't have been me. I wasn't wrong.
No, I was wrong. This is also a side note. Would help if more than one person playtested it before you made it.
Yeah.
So playtest your games. Mm-hmm. One, I did not double check the poster to make sure that the accent mark on Esme's ciphered name had transferred over. It was an I think it was an accent mark on an I for Esme's name in the Caesar cipher, but I should have done that because I forgot that I was kind of banking on the letter E in the first Caesar cipher being obvious, given that her name is two E's, one of which has an apostrophe.
Right.
But also it was an apostrophe. It was like an accented I and then an apostrophe S.
Mm-hmm.
And that also hadn't made it.
Yeah.
The apostrophe S had not made it, so it didn't read as possessive, whatever the cipher's name was. Oops. And the other thing is, I mixed up the number that was the couple's last apartment with the number that was Kaisa's last apartment with her college roommate before she and Esme moved in. So
awkward.
Oops. So this is a reminder that it's really important that you know your puzzle source material so that way you can spot check your errors quickly. Because otherwise, the number has no meaning to you. And therefore, you can't go and go, wait a second, that's not right.
Yeah.
You have to do a little bit of that, like, escape room officiator, like, nudge them a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of that.
Yeah, because they took an hour to do it.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, it was well.
That's an hour away from sausages.
Well, oh, that was the other thing. So there was miscommunication with the matron of honor.
They opened it, no sausages.
I don't know why, but the documentation for, I don't know where exactly the break of communication was. Apparently, we did sausages on Friday and we did baked potatoes on Saturday.
Oh,
so it's like, all right, well, we can't hide the sausages and lock them in the fridge. So we have to hide the potatoes because that's the only ingredient where it's like, oh no, we don't have the thing we need for dinner.
Yeah.
Which also meant that we had to make sure we timed it early enough so we could actually wash all the potatoes before and immediately start cooking.
Described this to us when you were we were brainstorming on this as like, you know, it's a little more complicated than your average kind of get together thing. And now it's like 10 times more complicated than that.
Oh, I was holding back.
Okay.
So we started off with so we woke up, had breakfast, then we started off with a tea party where all of us had forgotten our identities and they had to give, that was the first quest.
Okay.
Was they had to give, if fine, like they got a stack of poster cards with things that we had written that were like inside jokes with the couple. And they had to figure out which one they belonged to. And once we got all three of our memories back then, we would remember what our identities are again. Yeah. And because, you know, magic.
Yeah.
And then we did some crafts. And then we did a scavenger hunt quest that their parents had designed, which was kind of cool. And that was for all of us. That was fun.
Okay.
And then we had a break. Oh, no, we had lunch and then we had a break, which was great. I did some setup and just took a break. And then there was the punch bowl quest, which I helped a little bit with. It was a like Myrtle style logic puzzle because someone had poisoned the punch bowl. Oh, no, we have to find the culprit.
Yeah.
So they did that. And then immediately afterwards, that was the dinner quest and it had to be immediately afterwards because we needed to make sure we left time to wash the potatoes because baked potato, like they take over an hour in the fire to cook.
Yeah.
It was on a campfire. And so I was like, hey, so you did a really good job solving that murder. We have a bit of another issue. I think the Fae locked up our potatoes. Can you like help? But it was also kind of nice because then it was just like, okay, leave them in the air conditioned little mini cabin. Mm-hmm. And everyone else just gets to hang out and have some quiet time and chat while they solve the puzzle. And it took way longer than I thought it would. But it was also nice because it was like, okay, they're in air conditioning. We don't have to do anything for a bit. Cool.
Okay.
So, and then they rescued the potatoes. Then I washed the potatoes real fast. And then we had dinner. And then, the end of the Thieves Guild quest, which was a jeopardy of their special interests. Which actually, if they every time they answer wrong, they would lose HP. And if Esme had answered every single, based on her constitution score, if Esme had chosen to answer every single question on the board and got every single question wrong, she would have hit zero.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, she didn't.
Okay.
But that was a possibility.
Right, right.
Anyway.
So just give yourself just enough assurance, but only just.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it's unlosable.
So that was my Saturday. Oh, and we were all doing this in Renaissance outfits.
Of course.
So I was in like my chicken lady
outfit. I didn't imagine anything else.
Okay, cool. yeah. So that was that.
So it didn't go exactly to plan, but it sounds like it was a big hit.
Yeah, they really liked it. I think it was a really good puzzle for that part of the day, because again, like, did not need to DM it. There was one of the bridesmaids who I think has a background in early education was just in the room silently watching them the whole time, enjoying it. Like, side note, if you are like someone who studies kids or like psychology of kids or early development and just get really good at watching people, like watching kids play, you would make an excellent playtest facilitator, because you don't give anything away.
Yeah.
And you're just absorbing it all in and enjoying it. So mental note for you. Besides those two egregious errors, in general, I think it went well. So I've also become a real fan of choosing non-related orders to things as a way to randomize options. So I ordered the note cards with the modifiers in numerical order from -8 to whatever the plus was.
Okay.
Similarly, I found that the episode number for The Nice Thinking was a decently random 3-digit number. So I just used that for the combination lock.
Aw. Nice. So we were kind of, in a way, at the...
were. Yeah.
Presence felt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that also meant that I could easily double check the final answer to make sure I knew it, because I had multiple places where I could find it if I couldn't access my notes for some reason.
Yeah.
Right.
If Mural wouldn't open on my phone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it went pretty dang well.
Nice, cool. Nice. Well, that's great. That's great. I'm glad it went well.
Thank you again for the help.
Mm-hmm.
It was very needed.
It was fun to participate.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, there was one day where I was just sending screen grabs of Mural in progress while I was out setting up all of the things, mm-hmm. so that I can give, like, this is the basic specs. Here you go, Maddie. Originally, I was like, can you just tell me how big it needs, how many poster boards it needs to be and how big each element has to be? So that way I'm not like writing, you know, when you write a birthday card and then you misjudge the space and you have to kind of curve it down. I didn't want to do that. And she was like, I can do that in Canva. And then she ended up just making the whole poster board. I was like, oh my God, this is great. Awesome. Cool. I'll bring the tarot card and then write the modifiers when I get there. Cool. But yeah. That's the postmortem. Yay.
Cool.
And if listeners are like, well, that sounds exciting, but I don't know at all what you're talking about, you can go back and listen to that episode, which we'll put in the show notes.
Listen to Lydia stress about numbers for an hour.
That's the show, typically.
Yeah.
If I have anything to say about it.
But if you want a concentrated dose. All right, Steven, what are you up to?
Numbers.
Oh.
No. I'm talking about discussing scope.
That's basically numbers.
Yeah.
So clear this up for me. This is not scope. This is discussing.
It's discussing scope. Yeah. Okay. So I do want to make a distinction. That's important.
Huh?
Scope in general is just like, you know, figuring out how long it's going to take for you to make your game, right? But talking about that, I think, is different. It feels like a different conversation, because I think that it is easy to talk past one another, and you could be like, yeah, we could work on this thing in 3 months and get it done. Mm-hmm. And then, when I'm saying that, you don't know what the thing is, Lydia.
No, but I know the situation.
Okay.
Well, what goes into the buckets of 3 months?
Right.
It's different in your mind than someone else's mind.
Yeah.
You all
yeah.
agree that you all have 3 months to do it.
Yeah.
But then no one has the same idea of what's
uh-huh.
and what even time with. The final product.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen how this ends, and it hurts every time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm saying 3 months because I'm talking about this with respect to Sledgehammer Bride. Listeners maybe have heard in previous episodes that I've been working on Sledgehammer Bride. We've since rescoped Sledgehammer Bride's production time to be significantly shorter than it was before.
Okay.
Because
and why?
Because we don't have the money to keep working on it for past that. And mm-hmm. my understanding was that we were going to be working on it to make a prototype. We could pitch it to people.
Yeah.
Oh.
But that is not what other people's thoughts. But they wanted
to. So you're here to litigate that on air?
Well, no, we already did.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I guess that would have been good content, but.
You want the tea, Mark, and I just want the happy ending.
But basically, we've changed it so that we're just going to complete something for, like, make Sledgehammer Bride in 3 months. It's going to be really, really small.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a result.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because, like, you know, there's no reason if we finish the game and we're like, oh, this was great to work on, we want to make more of it, we can work more on it. If we release it and people are like, wow, this game is cool, we can work on it more.
Yeah.
If we release it and publishers like, hey, we want more of this game, we can make more of it.
Yeah.
These are all pie in the sky. Optimist looking ways.
And whether or not you put colon origin subtitle before you release the thing.
Is, you know, the maybe. Bachelorette party. That's the sequel.
You should put that puzzle in it.
No.
That's funny. But basically, I wanted to talk about like discussing scope because of this
Yeah.
We'd spent like 2 weeks talking about scope. We're not fully done with it yet still. Just like reestablishing what we have been working on and what actually we can do in the amount of time. So I want to talk about that. Like when you're talking about scope, when you're talking about what you mean by that, how do you even go about that conversation? Mm-hmm. Like Mark, for instance, you have been talking about this with your game.
Yeah.
I'm sure a ton.
Oh, yeah.
How do you know that, well, one, what you're thinking of is being communicated and what other people are thinking of is being communicated, and then also make sure that, like, everybody is on the same page with that?
People are going to hate this answer.
Okay.
But meetings and long ones.
Okay.
I don't hate that answer, like, actually.
I don't hate that either.
Completely agree.
Like, the truth is you just really got to talk it out.
Yeah.
You have to be like, okay, here's what I think. Someone else is here's what they think. You chat it out as you do.
Yeah.
Everyone knows how that works. And then you recap. You're like,
yeah.
So what we're agreeing to is.
Yeah.
And then everyone kind of validates.
Okay.
Like, you do kind of need to do it almost systemically.
Yeah.
And then it's helpful to have follow-up conversations in whatever tools you use, email, mm-hmm. Slack, Discord, mm. to, like, let people know, like, you have action items. So,
yeah.
Like, this is what we discussed. Here's the change I'm going to make because of that.
Yeah.
Or I don't need to make these changes yet because I'm not to that part yet.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of keep the communication alive so that if there's a miscommunication, you catch it immediately.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're just continuing to talk.
Okay.
And that does kind of mean you kind of have to have at least one, if not regular, kind of long meetings about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Can I add to that?
Yeah.
Napkin sketches or the equivalent thereof, mm-hmm. because so often, even if you do agree that you know what you're talking about, a picture actually then realizes, oh, we were using the same words for very different things.
Yeah, yeah.
And also sometimes you just can't get the right words to land in the right way. And as soon as you draw a terrible picture, immediately people understand what you've been trying to say for the last 5 attempts.
Right. How do you draw scope?
More often than not, what I mean is in to clarify a particular aspect of the scope that you're talking about.
Sure. So, like, for instance, you could draw a whole, like, a gameplay screen on a napkin or whatever.
Yeah. Or a flow of something.
Yeah.
Yeah. People will imagine it'll be like this and this and this happens. And in your mind, you're like, that's the entire enumerated thing.
Right.
And someone else is hearing, like, oh, that's an example of the 10 things that will happen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there could be a totally different idea of what you're talking about. But when you diagram it, sketch it out, do UX mockups, I think that's what you're talking about, Lydia.
I'm talking like just we're having a conversation, it's not landing. Like, when we were doing the nice thinking and you were saying equations and I can't hold numbers in my head, I was like, I need you to write it down.
Right.
Because otherwise I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, like, if you're describing something, you can end up with a different picture in your head. And if you're agreeing to that and you move on and then something that you're talking about next is reliant on understanding that that premise that you established.
Yeah.
And you realize, hold up, wait. That premise is different in my head than what is in your head. What is going on here? Why are we doing it this way?
Yeah.
That's where that goes.
Yeah.
However, I also think it could go with scope in terms of if you want to talk, if you're talking about as part of this discussion, like what is, you know, core, next level, if you kind of have tiers of if we have time, prioritize-wise,
yeah.
Then actually marking down, these are the things that have to be here, and then kind of what's the next radiation out of scope, what's the next radiation out?
Yeah.
Or a Venn diagram, you know, of any dependencies are oftentimes a lot easier to just draw an arrow. Like, hey, we can't have this unless this thing exists.
Yeah, I might differ a little bit, but it's more maybe in style than in substance, where people do this a lot, where you're like, we're going to do 3 levels. If we've got time, we'll do 4.
Mm-hmm.
And if, like, we get a little money, we'll do 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what then everyone hears is, all right, I hope we can do 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you know, that's a matter of team cohesion and discussion and stuff. But I think where I align with you on this is it's useful to know what's outside your scope and discuss it and then say no to it.
Right.
So it's you want to actualize and, you know, get down in some form what you have all agreed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also important to brainstorm past that to get it out of everyone's system.
Yeah, I very specifically have like a nice to have wish list bucket in even in Jira, I had like, this is wish list.
Yeah.
Where I, anything that goes in that we want to talk, like have, it just gets out of our system, goes into the bucket. And then if we have time, we can pull it out of the bucket. Or if we find a low scope way, getting it out of the system. I'm just saying, like, back to the, kind of the original use visuals while talking. If you are a team where tiered scope actually does work for you all, or that kind of structure of talking about it, and you don't end up trapped in the, oh, let's gun for scope level 5 when actually we should be thinking about core.
Yeah.
Having that as a visual of just circling, okay, this is the kernel, then we go outwards from here, can be helpful.
Yeah. I think I like to be a little bit as brutal as possible, because when you do have a little bit more time for something, or when you say, you know what, we're going to actually take a little more time to make it.
Yeah.
Or we're going to, you know, and you sort of give in on doing more than you planned, which always happens. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to do everything on that next level.
Yeah.
So know what you want to do is then a whole nother discussion. So it's, I like to just like put a fence around and say, all of this is no.
Yeah.
And as soon as we crack that fence open, then the conversation has to start over.
So draw a fence.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my main point, was use visuals.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You don't know how I solved it?
What?
Spreadsheets.
Oh, yeah. Spreadsheets are good, too.
Yeah, because you can give people tasks, because then they understand the scope of their own work.
Yeah.
And if it's just the project, then, you know, even if you haven't signed people yet, people can start seeing how big it is when it's broken out.
Yeah, I literally listed out, well, I did it kind of with using assets for art, because I think our team is, ironically, because based off of my past history of Future Club, is art limited.
Right.
Wow.
And so, well, we're also programmer limited. I'm currently
don't program
again. So, you know, it's fine. Anyway.
Wow.
Well, yeah, you got a team of idea people? What's going on over there?
No. I think we have a lot of ambitions. And I think really a lot of the problem is we just don't have a lot of time, because we're all part-time.
Yeah.
Right? So, anyway, what I did is I listed out all of the assets we would need for the one level that we're doing for Sledgehammer Bright.
Yeah.
I was like, we're going to need this enemy. This enemy has this animation, this animation, this animation.
Yeah.
We got a boss. This is what the boss does. This is what the player could do. These are the only combos that the player will do and such. I didn't describe literally all of the details.
Yeah.
And also, I was like, this is just me saying, I know I'm the creative director, but I'm not literally, these are not the Ten Commandments coming down from on high.
Like, right, right.
If we want to change something. then we could just have a conversation about that. I don't want this to be a finalized thing. I don't want people to be like, oh, Stephen said we're doing this. This is the only way we're doing it. Like, that is not what I wanted.
Well, let me ask you, why not?
Because it's not just my game. I know all that it is my idea, and I am the creative director, but I don't want it to, I want other people to feel like they have impact into how the game is being made.
Sure, sure. I would just advise you to know that part of your responsibility as creative director is to lay down the law.
Oh, I am shooting things down. Okay.
No, I know, but there's definitely a difference between my door is always open for you to get for you to get kicked out of the room.
Sure.
Versus, like, sometimes the door is closed, and then we save everybody some time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm doing both.
Okay, okay.
That's a fair point, though. Mm-hmm. That's part of why I wanted to lay it out like this, because, like, if the spreadsheet ends up being twice as big as what it was before, then we know we screwed something up.
Yeah.
And I'm not, like, the expert at creating a scoping diagram or whatever, but, like, I did what I could in the hour or whatever I did it in.
Oh, yeah.
So it was not very complete.
Well, I think also you should feel fine about that, because I think one of the things that people miss is, like, there's a lot of, and this is true of, like, agile or playtesting any kind of thing where you, like, there are best practices that are hard to do naturally, then it's really easy to just tip over into dogma instead.
Yeah.
So you don't, to avoid all the pitfalls.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing about scope is, like, it's very dangerous, but at the same time, like, this is, like, a dangerous business. Like, risk is why we're out here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, as long as you have a process for reevaluating as you go, and you try as best you can to, like, to you know, put that fence around it, to have those tiers, to however works for you and your team.
Yeah.
Like, when someone just says, oh, here's a cool idea, and everyone's like, oh, we didn't talk about that, but everyone just agrees it's so cool.
Yeah.
And you just do it.
Yeah.
It's fine. You didn't wreck the project.
Right.
Now, you can't make that you're part of the core culture of your team. But, like, it can be very, there's definitely a difference between, like, just letting all 1,000 flowers bloom and getting, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger, and just being like, this is exactly what it is. It can't be any different regardless of the experiences we have between now when it's finished.
Yeah.
That brings up a thing that I remember is that sometimes when I was having conversations about scope with Future Club, I was the only programmer, and so people would pitch ideas to me, and it's kind of weird how this worked now that I think about it. People would pitch ideas to me and I'd be like, we can't do that because I don't want to do it. or it'd be too hard or whatever.
Right. It was always you didn't want to do it, but you had other reasons you could give them.
Yeah. but
sorry, I don't have enough semicolons for that.
I've only got
in this economy?
Can't buy these semicolons anywhere. But what I had found helpful is that I would ask the person why they want this thing. Would be like, you'd pitch something that was similar a few different times, and I'd be like, I can't do this. This would be too hard. This isn't going to work. And then I'd be like, why do you want this thing to be this way? Well, I need some more narrative freedom to be able to provide this, or like the player needs some agency at this moment or something, you know? And so like I would be like, okay, well maybe we could figure out a way to get that to work that's still within scope.
Yeah.
That works for me too.
Yeah.
That I want to do. That I don't want to do enough, I guess.
Right.
Don't want to not do enough. I think that helps, like if you get everybody on the same page about what they want from it.
Yeah.
And I think that will make it feel a little bit
right. That's the design pillar question, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, does this meet the goals we set out?
Yeah.
And that's a great way to determine whether it's time to like open the fence a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, one of our goals is X, and these three things, now that we've got them sort of up and running, it's not quite enough to get the feeling of that.
Right.
Now we kind of have to make this a little bit bigger or add a thing.
Yeah.
But then that also really constrains the conversation to only, because you're already expanding scope now,
right?
Only things that meet that. Mm-hmm. It's not blue sky brainstorming at that point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. If everybody has an understanding of what scope is, if we want to add things, then they know the cost of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it makes that conversation easier to have, mm-hmm. or at least it grounds that conversation in something that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. Well, we've solved scope. That's great.
Wow. And it only took how long?
Some amount of time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Listeners, I would love to hear if you have thoughts on how you explain your ideas of scope to people you're working with, because I think that like we came up with our own, actually three different solutions. Mine had more math, but
well, mine was meant to be in conjunction with your other twos. It's all
that's
you
true.
Use all of
well,
them
exactly. You have tools. There's tools in the toolbox.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I'm curious what tools you have in your toolbox that you like to bring out when you're talking about this stuff.
Yeah, what works and what hasn't worked for you too.
Yeah, very specifically, I want to hear. Because I remember, I think this got brought up with Yuri Lowenthal, mm-hmm. like kind of how do you gently shut down an idea because you don't have time when someone's kind of going.
Yeah.
What are phrases that you use to help gently, like to acknowledge and celebrate, but also to move on from things?
Yeah.
I also feel like, side note, this might be a fun game. The intersection with things that you as a parent tell your toddler is probably close to a circle.
Yep.
And so if you ever want to add those in too, let us know. Yeah. I'd be curious. My favorite is, I love that. I wish we could do that.
Yeah.
We can't.
You don't think people see through that though?
No, because so often we can't.
it has a virtue of being true, right?
And very often, like genuinely, it's like, oh my God, that'd be so fun. Yeah. Oh, I wish we could do that.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah.
What if it wouldn't be so fun, though?
I have a different phrase for that.
But maybe you don't want to reveal it here on air?
It very much depends on the thing. I know who I'm talking to.
Yeah. Well, I say that because I want to be, one, I'm a believer in all ideas are good.
Yeah.
So it is pretty easy to be like, that's a great idea. Because like all ideas are good.
Yeah.
But then you just start talking about it in the context of what you need to do. And you also have to know that like, even if you're in a position of authority, if you don't like it or don't think it's good or don't think it's worth expanding scope for, you have to present it as this is why you think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not this is why this is that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if you're in a position of authority, why you think that means that's we're going to do it the way you think.
Right.
But when you're communicating, you want to make sure that people understand that like they're allowed to think you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like they can still disagree with you
if
there's a hierarchy in place, and then they can just be comfortable with that moving forward. But I try to be as, because I want this when I give ideas.
Mm-hmm.
If someone says like, I don't like this, this is why, I'm like, well, I like it, but you don't, and we're working together, so let's not do it. Like,
yeah.
I feel much more comfortable than someone telling me, like, giving me technical reasons or you know what I mean? I want to have that creative conversation.
Sure.
And so I always try to provide that for others and in a way that is contextual to the project.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it is just because it's just not to my taste, I try to be honest about that's the reason.
Yeah.
And if, you know, because there's no virtue in hiding that necessarily. As long as you have a space of respect for people.
Right.
Yeah. I think I remembered, I will raise concerns.
Yeah.
And it sometimes will be technical, sometimes will be design pillory, and sometimes both at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I will phrase it very often as like, I'm concerned that if we do this, then XYZ, or I don't know, I'm concerned that if we do this, it won't actually be solving the problem because they would be doing this instead.
Yeah.
Because labeling that as a concern is, again, framing it as I'm thinking this.
Yeah.
And it is simultaneously both I am thinking this from my perspective and I am projecting my own thoughts on and trying to guess what the player is thinking, mm-hmm. which is squidgy, right?
Oh, yeah.
It acknowledges that. And so that is my answer to your previous question.
Yeah. So we're basically the same. It's just, you know, it's about communication.
Yes.
Right? It's not easy.
We solved scope twice. Well, my Nice Games Club t-shirt is, it's been nice, but I think I need a new one.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
Feels like a really difficult problem.
Yeah.
Where might you, do you like get out the puffy paints and
kind of trace? Nope, time to go to the mines.
Yeah, yeah, let's see. Where could I go to get a Nice Games Club themed t-shirt? Well, there's nicegames.club/merch. I can maybe go there.
No.
Wait, hold on. Let me try.
Okay, okay.
It'll never work. Impossible.
Type, type, type.
Type, type, type.
I'm doing it for real. Wouldn't you know? You're correct, sir.
Wow. Wow. I can get a t-shirt here. Oh, my goodness. They have pillows, too?
What will they come up with next?
A card game named Glom?
What?
This is amazing.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to go to nicegames.club/merch all the time. Get all of my things.
That's nicegames.club/merch. We've done better versions of this game. So, Lydia, you have a topic today,
mm-hmm.
and it's one you've been threatening us with for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of excited to see, what's in store for us.
Well, hopefully I don't disappoint. Probably will. Inspiration through research.
Yeah.
I've already talked about my favorite thing, the idea of composting, where all your experiences eventually break down into creative energy, and at some point will foster that, and you'll pull from all those experiences.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes I just need to purposely add to the pile and kind of get something from it immediately. I was thinking about it. This thing that I do kind of came into stark relief because I am prepping for our Blades in the Dark campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start in July. Very excited. It's in the same setting as our D&D campaign because my husband originally made that setting to play Blades, but it's easier to get people to play 5e and then be like, haha, let's play Blades after this. So I was having a lot of trouble getting a sense of my Blades in the Dark character, especially going from Henley, my D&D character, where I had a very clear, like, I know why this person is adventuring. Like, I know how they got here.
Yeah.
My character is a valet to one of the other characters, Sakaisa's character. So that is a servant, someone who essentially is in charge of a person of higher classes, you know, daily affairs, their clothing, their household. They travel with them, they handle their travel and all that stuff. Kind of lady in waiting-esque, but a little bit more. If you ever heard of like Jeeves or Bunter, or I would argue that
it's what people think a butler is.
But it's not.
Right.
Instead of arranging the whole household, you're just like organizing a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
If you've seen Downton Abbey, you know,
it's that.
They got a number of them in that.
Yes. So I was having trouble figuring out anything kind of beyond that. But also I was having a lot of trouble pulling my mind out of like, even just trying to think, like trying to pull my mind out of that reference material. Like, okay, I'm not playing, so I don't want to place a British accent. We don't really have those in the setting. I want to play a woman, and I'm already like, that's not often a valet. Usually it's a men's. There's a different word for a woman, but usually a valet is a man. And I was having trouble pulling out of like, oh, what is the personality of like Jeeves or Sebastian from Black Butler or Bunter from Lord Peter Wimsey? I can't get out of that. And so I was trying to find something. So I asked Ian for a little bit of help. Now, I really, really like clothing as a primary source of a character. I often notice what people are wearing first, just in day to day. I glean information about them and the world that from their clothing, both in real life and also I very much attune to that in media I consume, especially video games and other stuff. And so I asked Ian for an example of what servants would wear in Crescendo, like household servants of the more high class people. We had happened to meet a butler in the previous campaign. So I was like, okay, like, what would be the type of thing that the butler, like a female version of that butler would be wearing in Crescendo? Also, because the setting is 22 years before the events of what we had just played.
Sure.
So similar, but not really. So then Ian very kindly came back with a couple of references from 1980s fashion history. And I linked a photo of them below. One is a Ralph Lauren tweed jacket. Which a woman is wearing over a purple dress with like a Peter Pan collar. And then one is a all plaid outfit from Perry Ellis Sportswear. That is, it's like all plum, kind of plum check, kind of a plaid with like navy blue and a little bit of olive mixed in. And immediately I was like, okay, I see now a bit more, like I can actually ground myself in this character. And so I've started looking at more of that kind of fashion and then trying to think, okay, well, here's some references, but my character also is employed by someone who's an alchemist. What would my character be wearing that is lab safe? What would I wear over it? And starting to try and that was the center of it. And so I've been looking at other like sources for that.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what I realized through that exercise that, wow, actually like researching something and kind of going into what maybe would be seen as like a tangent rabbit hole is actually quite helpful for me. I personally don't like a blank canvas. I think you can tell that by now. I really don't. I need something to build off of like a trellis. So I'm usually not sure where to start. I look up stuff, I learn a thing, and then I incorporate details into that final thing.
Yeah.
And that's where I find also a lot of joy. So, often, so like, especially with my job, one of the things, for example, I was researching 1920s Chicago, and I found resources on what telephone numbers were like in the period of like Prohibition era Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Things like at one point for a previous game, I was trying to find, what's it called? I was trying to figure out different thing qualities for our chemistry materials so that way maybe they could interact with things and be used in level design. And so I started looking up hazard triangles or hazard diamonds. Mm-hmm. And then I started learning about that and I was like, oh, that actually would be kind of an interesting learning opportunity, learning how to read those things because you see them everywhere. Yeah. If you ever just drive past a tanker on the highway, you'll see that. And most people don't actually know what that means.
Right, yeah.
That is something that I would not have considered, but it was just learning about hazard diamonds meant that I had potential ideas to bring back to the team as far as qualities for the items that could interact with the levels and with each other, but also had a potential, you know, small, hopefully small, well, at the time, you know, bump in scope. But that maybe could be linked to a learning objective as well as be informative to how the thing behaves in the space, right? Have it be in universe UI as well. It honestly feels a lot of what I find very exciting about getting to research and finding ideas that then can generate into either other ideas through research as like a polygon unraveled or like an Any Austin video in reverse where it's like, oh, I don't know. We need a building. I don't know what buildings of this era looks like. Boop-a-doop. Oh my gosh, I'm learning things about architecture. And I've actually found some things that would work very nicely. Mm-hmm. I have ideas of how a character would traverse this roof style, for instance. That's kind of the thing I'm talking about. It is also, I mean, I kind of wonder now, is this just the history major in me? Or is this something else? Because it's a different thing than, oh, I really like mythology. I pull a lot of inspiration from my previous knowledge of mythology for this narrative, right? It's a very different dynamic than that kind of bank of deeper knowledge that one has.
Yeah, I don't know if this is what you'd expect to hear, but I feel like what you're describing is the only way to do it.
Explain.
What is common for people who are working on maybe their first big project, or they've been like building up this thing in their head for a long time, they start putting down ideas.
Yeah,
is then it's really just based on what's in their head.
Yeah,
and people, they don't always know it, but they hit a wall on that pretty quickly, and then it becomes kind of there's not a lot of depth there ultimately.
Right,
regardless of how much is in your head.
Sure.
But as you're describing, like at a certain point, you need to have like, well, it needs to be sort of like something. Okay, well, let me go now out into the field, whether that's the internet or the library or...
Mm-hmm. I've done both.
Or out in the world or something. Some way to get some experience or some, just research of any kind or information you don't have now to inform a goal you have.
Right.
I feel like that is the only way to do it.
I think the thing, and maybe this is a subtle difference, but where I kind of feel there might be a difference is the difference between I am looking for this specific thing and I don't know what I'm looking for. I'm going to look at a thing and see where it takes me. And I feel like I'm talking about the second. Whereas, there are many times one would research where it's like, I need to find particular buildings that have roofs that could be run on feasibly, that are not steepled too much. That's a very specific thing that you need in order to complete the task of this particular thing.
Yes. I think that comes later in the process where it's like you have a specific, you need to find, you've made a choice.
Mm.
You need to find something that fits that choice.
Yeah.
And then, or to invalidate your theory.
This is, it sounds like this is before those choices have been made.
Where earlier
you're
like in that.
Still establishing what it is you're trying to make and like using things that you're discovering about it to help guide that process.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really care how creative or inventive you are. Mm-hmm. Like you can't just entirely build it just from what's in your head. Like you have to pull from other places.
Yeah.
And how much of that and at what degree and which areas or whatever is going to be different for everybody in every creative, every inspiration task.
Yeah. And it's not even just because of the limitations of it. It's because like, if you're just doing it from your head, like it makes sense in your head, it won't make sense in other people's heads. And using other influences and other contexts to help guide that.
Communicate that. That's true. I think I'm leaning more on the, like, you do not actually have the full idea that you think.
I mean, that's true too. Sure. Yeah.
And to finish the idea, you need to, it's a, ideation is a working process.
Yeah.
It's not a sit and it's not a theoretical process.
Right.
It requires activity on your behalf. And sometimes that's very traditional research, like you'd imagine somebody finding research materials. Mm. And sometimes it's research in the form of experience.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to a place and see what it's like or whatever. And then, I've got this idea for how this might work because of what I saw there.
Mm-hmm.
You go in with an idea of what your ultimate goals are, but not you're not looking for a specific answer the way you might later in during production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More commonly, I think.
Yeah.
I think for folks who heard your description and were like, oh wow, that's a new novel thing, like hold on tight to that because I think it is the only way to do it.
Yeah.
Wiggles at the margins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I will say it definitely does sound like a history major thing because like it's definitely my instinct goes.
Your affinity for that process, because it's a struggle for some.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's me.
It definitely depends on your background, how much you're leaping towards that as a exciting way to do things.
Yeah,
honestly, I do kind of find it very similar to, I mean, you've played Blueprint, so I'm connecting to you on that level.
Yeah, yeah.
When you walk into a room and you notice something, you're like, huh, that's weird.
Yeah.
I wonder why that's that way.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the step.
Ah.
Is you're going around to like, huh, that's cool. huh, I wonder if I could use that.
It's been so long since I've played Blueprints not casually that I'm trying to remember if I approached going into rooms with that kind of curiosity, or if I was like, well, the game didn't tell me anything about this, so I'm not going to worry.
You never like looked and went, that's weird, why is that there?
I mean, I probably did.
Okay.
But I just, it's been a while.
That was one of the things that I really just, I enjoyed.
Yeah, no, enjoyed that aspect of Blueprints.
And just in puzzles in general, I was like, why is it that way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Because it's that notion of being, maybe inspired is not the right word, because that's what we're talking about. But like, to see something and then like use that as a hook to want to know more, to build out what your idea is going to be.
Yeah.
So I figured out a way that I do this. Mm-hmm. It's not research exactly. Mm-hmm. I ask other people these questions instead.
Oh yeah.
So Mark, when we're watching Star Trek all the time, I will ask absurd questions about the world of Star Trek, and you'll have an answer for me because of course you do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know what that is? That's research. That's going to a specialized material consultant. Yeah.
Heck. Okay.
Also, in the way I like, you know, dole out the material, it's like reading Wikipedia. Like it's
okay.
But better than an e-reader.
I like hearing other people talk, and then I can ask you questions about it.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, that's how I am approaching it, I guess.
Yeah.
If we want to call it research, that's fine. I'm like, a nerd, too.
Like, in Star Trek, that's what the cast does when they ask the computer questions.
Yeah.
And that's what people want their personal assistant and AI chatbots to do.
Right, yeah.
Not there yet.
No. But effectively, that's kind of the same thing, yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be $200 a month, please?
You could just give him a bunch of water.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you need a whole lake? Or?
Yeah.
We've got so many.
I'll take 6 acres of farmland.
I mean, to quote Jeeves, I guess, if we need to close out, at one point, Bertie Wooster looks and says, do you know everything, Jeeves? And Jeeves very subtly says, I don't know, sir. Very knowingly. And then Bertie's like, oh.
That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Discuss this episode or others or whatever with your fellow listeners on Discord. Stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.